With a theatrical flourish, he rolled up the sleeve of his left arm and extended his hand. The assembled wizards watched with interest. Eighth levels were above magic as a rule, spending most of their time in contemplation, normally of the next menu, and of course avoiding the attentions of ambitious wizards of the seventh level. This should be worth seeing. Bilias grinned at the boy, who returned it with a stare that focused on a point a few inches beyond the back of the old wizard's head. Somewhat disconcerted, Bilias flexed his fingers. Suddenly this wasn't quite the game he had intended, and he felt an overpowering urge to impress. It was swiftly overtaken by a surge of annoyance at his own stupidity and being unnerved.
"I shall show you," he said, and took a deep breath, "Maligree's wonderful garden."
There was a susurration from the diners. Only four wizards in the entire history of the university had ever succeeded in achieving the complete garden. Most wizards could create the trees and flowers, and a few had managed the birds. It wasn't the most powerful spell, it couldn't move mountains, but achieving the fine detail built into Maligree's complex syllables took a finely tuned skill.
"You will observe," Bilias added, "nothing up my sleeve."
His lips began to move. His hands flickered through the air. A pool of golden sparks sizzled in the palm of his hand, curved up, formed a faint sphere, began to fill in the detail. Legend had it that Maligree, one of the last of the true sorcerers, created the garden as a small, timeless, private, self-locking universe where he could have a quiet smoke and a bit of a think while avoiding the cares of the world. Which was itself a puzzle because no wizard could possibly understand how any being as powerful as a sorcerer could have a care in the world. Whatever the reason, Maligree retreated further and further into a world of his own, and then one day closed the entrance after him. The garden was a glittering ball in Bilias's hand. The nearest wizards craned admiringly over his shoulders and looked down into a 2-foot sphere that showed a delicate, flower-strewn landscape. There was a lake in the middle distance, complete in every ripple, and purple mountains behind an interesting-looking forest. Tiny birds the size of bees flew from tree to tree, and a couple of deer no larger than mice glanced up from their grazing and stared out at Coin, who said critically,
"It's quite good. Give it to me."
He took the intangible globe out of the wizard's hands and held it up.
"Why isn't it bigger?" he said.
Bilias mopped his brow with a lace-edged handkerchief.
"Well," he said weakly, so stunned by Coin's tone that he was quite unable to be affronted, "since the old days, the efficacity of the spell has rather..."
Coin stood with his head on one side for a moment as though listening to something. Then he whispered a few syllables and stroked the surface of the sphere. It expanded. One moment it was a toy in the boy's hands, and the next, the wizards were standing on cool grass in a shady meadow rolling down to the lake. There was a gentle breeze blowing from the mountains. It was scented with thyme and hay. The sky was deep blue, shading to purple at the zenith. The deer watched the newcomers suspiciously from their grazing ground under the trees. Spelter looked down in shock. A peacock was pecking at his bootlaces. He began and stopped. Coin was still holding a sphere of air. Inside it, distorted as though seen through a fisheye lens or the bottom of a bottle, was the great hall of the unseen university. The boy looked around at the trees, squinted thoughtfully at the distant snow-capped mountains, and nodded at the astonished men.
"It's not bad," he said. "I should like to come here again."
He moved his hands in a complicated motion that seemed, in some unexplained way, to turn them inside out. Now the wizards were back in the hall, and the boy was holding the shrinking garden in his palm. In the heavy, shocked silence, he put it back into Bilias's hands and said,
"That was quite interesting. Now I will do some magic."
He raised his hands, stared at Bilias, and vanished him.
Pandemonium broke out, as it tends to on these occasions. In the centre of it stood Coin, totally composed, in a spreading cloud of greasy smoke. Ignoring the tumult, Spelter bent down slowly and with extreme care picked a peacock feather off the floor. He rubbed it thoughtfully back and forth across his lips as he looked from the doorway to the boy to the vacant arch-chancellor's chair, and his thin mouth narrowed, and he began to smile. An hour later, as thunder began to roll in the clear skies above the city, and Rincewind was beginning to sing gently and forget all about cockroaches, and a lone mattress was